Allison Drewin is our computer gal. She's a professor at the iSchool at the University of Maryland and special advisor for National Digital Strategy for the National Park Service, for whom she will not be speaking today. Is that correct?
That's a nice way to phrase it. I do not represent my viewpoints. Do not represent the National Park Service,
Yogi Bear or Jellystone Park,
nor the entire United States. Isn't that impressive?
That's impressive.
Who I don't represent. Yeah.
Do you take responsibility, however, for your own opinions?
I take no responsibility for my own opinions.
Good answer.
I guess not. That's John Gilroy's position. He's our computer guy and Director for Business Development for BLT Global Ventures. John Gilroy, welcome.
I'm going to take a day off and work on my title. You got the best titles ever, Alice. What's the sport title? Maybe Jellystone Park Manager, Park Ranger or something. I got to work on that title.
Bill Harlow is our computer guy. He's a hardware and software technician from Axon PCs at Mid-Atlantic Consulting Incorporated. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Kojo.
And hello, all of you who'd like to join this conversation by calling 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. We're going to flip our usual order and start with an app due out next week. It's called People, spelled P-E-E-P-L-E. And it lets you rate other people, spelled P-E-O-P-L-E, which makes it feel like the second word should be people. But somehow the English language has configured that into people. Do you think that sounds like a great idea or a digital nightmare? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Would you use an app that let you rate people the way you rate restaurants or dry cleaners? You can send us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. Bill, please explain the idea behind this People app and how it will work.
So the idea was people were describing it as a Yelp for other people. So the way this was initially envisioned, and the plan has changed. Initially, it was going to be that anybody could rate anybody, you know, whether it's a professional interaction or maybe somebody you knew personally, and you could submit a positive or a negative review for this person. And you had no control over who got to rate you. The only control you really had was if you never signed up for the service yourself, the negative reviews would not be published online. They would just be hidden in the database. So that, to me, is kind of scary, too, the idea that everybody's talking behind my back, and I decide to go and see what's up, and I sign in, and the floodgates are open for all the negative things people said. But it also sounds like, even though it's coming from a place of positivity, it sounds like a lot of things online, it's a place that can be potentially dangerous. A lot of ways to use a service like this to harass somebody.
Exactly how would it work?
So the idea is that you would have to prove that you knew somebody. So I think you'd have to know their phone number or have to know them on Facebook. You'd have to use your real name.
Then you rate them?
And then you rate them, yeah. You submit your reviews.
Imagine I could just rate John for, like, how he cooks. Or
famous chef.
Or how he drinks his coffee or something, you know. And imagine everything you've ever done, you could be rated in a review. How, like, horrific could this be, right?
The P-E-E-P in people seems to be the most important part of it.
Oh,
it's my understanding that your daughter's class talked about this peeping, people.
You're in trouble now, Coach.
What did they think in her class?
Her high school class actually had this full discussion about how scary this would be. Could this be an excuse for bullying? Could it follow them the rest of their lives? Could it emotionally, socially, you know, hurt them job-wise? And so they actually all made an agreement that none of them would put this app on any of their hardware that had to do with the
school. And they're teenagers.
No, listen to the motto. We want to bring positivity and kindness to the world.
I know.
What could possibly go wrong with that?
But, okay, as of 3 hours ago, they essentially backed down. There was so much bad press for this app. I mean, these people were getting, the founders were getting death threats. I mean, seriously.
That's not positivity.
I think if nothing else, that just shows how, you know, potentially dangerous the online world can be. I mean, you're creating this app to be positive and people are reacting to you negatively. That kind of tells you maybe you need to rethink your plans.
So basically now they have decided that there will be no negativity allowed, okay? That, in other words, you have to have permission to be on. There'll be no waiting to take down bad comments. They will just be taken out, and you yourself get to approve any comment that someone says. So, John, if I give you a 3 for drinking coffee and you don't like that 3, you're basically done, you know, and we just cross
that. What happens when Kojo evaluates me and says, John is frequently sober? Is that positive? Is that negative? Who's going to evaluate that? I evaluate that? The system evaluates that?
Well, apparently the site is not going to allow any negative comments at all, right? It's going to be a niceness.
It's a nice...
Imagine that.
I know. And actually, so there are a number of people that... So now they've had the reverse backlash of people saying, how boring, do we need another positive site? Like LinkedIn or like, you know, well, there's
If it isn't positive, can it do, John, irreparable harm to somebody's reputation? It
might be blank. Not good there. Oh, wow, what a loser he is.
That's true. It's better for people to say something nice about you than not to say anything at all.
It's going to cost me a lot of money, $20 a compliment. Anyone listening, I'll pay you $20 to say something good about me.
Well, tell us if you would use that app, 800-433-8850, that lets you rate people. It wasn't a closely guarded secret, but late last month, Google unveiled 2 Nexus phones that ship with the latest version of Android. It also introduced a new tablet called the Pixel C, and new features for Chromecast video streaming. Bill, what's new in the Nexus 5X and 6P?
You know, with all these announcements, I wish I could remember where the headline was. Great. It was along the lines of Google just announced everything Apple just released, but cheaper. And that's sort of what happened here. So they've got the Nexus phones have always been Google's sort of flagship, pristine, clean, pure Android experiences. They're the ones that, they partner with other manufacturers to sell these things that are Google branded. So the 5X is the smaller one, the 5.2-inch screen. The 6P, the Nexus 6P, has a 5.7-inch screen. And they both are 64-bit. They believe they're both quad-core. They have fingerprint readers. They've got really nice 12-megapixel cameras. The Pixel C, that's sort of their version of the Microsoft Surface or the iPad Pro. It's about a 10-inch screen, and you can convert it into a laptop-style form factor. The Chromecast is basically the Chromecast you always knew. You know, it's round now, and it supports faster speeds, higher resolutions. But it's, you know, the big selling point of the Chromecast is that it's $35. The audio one, I think, is more interesting to me just because a lot of things have Bluetooth for wireless audio, but it doesn't sound great.
And the phone is round or the...
I'm sorry, no. I'd like to try a round phone. A digital rotary phone. The Chromecast.
Dial Kojo.
The Chromecast is round. It's a round dongle that plugs into your TV. But the audio, the Chromecast audio, I think is kind of cool because it's a Wi-Fi higher grade of audio, sort of like Apple's AirPlay.
How would you compare this new phone with the iPhone 6S or 6S Plus and the Galaxy S6?
Well, you know, I was looking at them and I realized that, okay, so maybe the Apple 6 Plus is thinner and maybe the Nexus 6 is like 0.05 taller or
scandalous
0.21 inches wider. Honestly, from like a distance of, you know, a foot, you probably would not be able to tell the difference. I think the real difference is where do you want your apps from? Okay. Are you an app person that lives in the is in the Apple world? Are you a person that lives in the Android world? Many of the kids' apps still live predominantly in the Apple world, in which case you probably want to stick with your Apples, with your iPhone series. But for people that that have software in the Android world, this is a perfectly good option. They've replicated anything that you've got mostly with Apple except for those apps. So, I think it's a great option, a great possibility.
John, care to wake up and join this conversation?
I was just thinking about dialing a code with a rotary phone. Well,
we had somebody who wanted to talk about the People app that we talked about earlier. Somebody tweeted that People sounds like a recipe for bullying. And then we got an email from Copa who said, I want to point out that the original intent of Facebook was to do exactly this kind of rating, and perhaps the number of friends someone has is a measure of their popularity. I think that went out a while ago.
Well, there was discussion of having a thumbs down, mm-hmm. a dislike option. And boy, that raised people's, blood pressure, you know, and because really what is Facebook? It's, you know, if you put your vacation pictures online and you get 120 likes, you say, aha, I've done something great. If you put it up there and you get 2 likes, you know that nobody really cares and okay, you're done. They feel like you don't really need that dislike thing because the dislike thing is really not such a nice thing. So.
Well, Google has also introduced a new tablet that heads toward being a laptop substitute. What does the Pixel C do, Bill?
Oh, that's the one we actually just talked about. That it was the one that you can.
Like John, I wasn't listening.
That's fair. That's fair. Happens a lot when I talk. But
what did you say?
So just repeat it fast.
Just
okay.
Just to recap, the Pixel C is their 10-inch tablet that's a little more pro. It's got, of course, a really nice touchscreen, and they include a
tablet. Just put the word dongle in, and someone's going to listen.
And it's round. Did I mention that, John? The Pixel C is a round tablet.
It's not a round tablet.
No, but it comes with a.
He's giving bad information now.
It's a convertible tablet with a really nice folding keyboard, so you can make it into a laptop-like device.
If you happen to be listening and would like to make a comment or have a question, call us at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Google introduced new features for its Chromecast video streaming service, but Amazon will no longer sell Chromecast or Apple TV. What's going on in the video streaming market?
Well,
listening to this because I have Apple TV.
So this is kind of odd, right? So Amazon has their instant video streaming service, and if you're an Amazon Prime member, you have a lot of things you can access for free. Amazon's also a huge retailer. They sell a lot of stuff from a lot of people, and this is kind of in a gray area, right? It's their store. They can sell what they want, but they're saying that the Google Chromecast and the Apple TV will no longer be sold on Amazon because they don't have support for Amazon video.
And it might confuse.
It might confuse.
That's a good one.
Yeah. This is so not about the
confusion.
User.
Right.
This is so wrong.
Well, Amazon fights for the people, Allison.
Oh, right. You know what? Say it like it is. If you don't want to sell something, just say, hey, they're a competitor. We're not selling it. But don't lie. I mean, that was a lie.
No, it's shady
at
best.
That's not positivity. We got to work on positivity.
Well, here's what I find hilarious, too, is that Amazon makes an app for the iPhone and the iPad that can play this video. And it seems to me that since tvOS for Apple TV will allow you to make apps and it's based on a similar core, they could just port that right over and then boom, you've got your Amazon video on your Apple TV. But no word on that yet. So this strikes me as a real line in the sand. Maybe they're going to say, no, we explicitly will not make this Apple TV app and we want to directly compete with the Apple TV and this is one of the advantages we will use with our store.
And I'll bet that Jeff Bezos will take advertising dollars from Apple for the Washington Post.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he will.
That's true. But, you know, it's actually surprising because here's the Kindle app that did so well by being agnostic and going on absolutely every platform and really took over the online reading world. And how could you not do this for your TV? I mean, it's crazy.
And also,
anyway.
If you're one of those TV supposed cord cutters who's ditching cable and switching to streaming devices, this now complicates your life. It makes it tougher to pick the devices to watch what you want to watch.
Exactly, that's true. Absolutely.
Back to the People app. Here is David in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. David, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that when it comes to Yelp and other review sites, I actually work at a place at a brewery. We give out tours. We give free beer. You'd think people would be thrilled about that.
But, I would.
What's your address?
One of our favorite things to do is actually sit around about once a month or so, and we like to read all of the bad reviews we can find, and we sit there on a campfire, and we do it like beat slam poetry style, dramatic pauses and everything else. We have a blast with it, and it really just shows you how terrible some people decide to be. It doesn't bother us at all. We just laugh hysterically. I would actually love a People app. If I could sit around and do the same thing but with reviews about myself, that would make me incredibly happy as a human being.
It also sounds like the staff there really enjoys their own product from the sound of things.
Before or after closing.
We do.
You sound like a very balanced human being that has got a good ego on him. So good for you. Good for you.
Thank you.
Well, you were hoping we would say you're unbalanced, didn't you? But you're not. You're probably balanced and normal. And we've got to take a short break. When we come back, more with the Computer Guys and Gal. We'll take your questions or comments at 800-433-8850. You can shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Nam.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back to the Computer Guys and Gal. Bill Harlow is a hardware and software technician for Macs and PCs at Mid-Atlantic Consulting Incorporated. John Gilroy is director for business development for BLT Global Ventures. Allison Druin is special advisor for national digital strategy for the National Park Service and a professor at the iSchool at the University of Maryland. On some of the topics we discussed earlier, here is a comment from an email from David who says, an important feature for many consumers is that the Google Nexus phones arrive unlocked, allowing the consumer to choose the cell phone carrier that meets their needs without getting into long-term contracts. A lot of people are looking for that, Bill.
Yeah, that's a great point. And these phones are one of the cheaper ways of getting into that, too.
There's an interesting philosophical question that we're about to raise, but since we mentioned it earlier, people are weighing it on it already. For instance, we have an email from Mike who says, I actually don't believe that the monkey or any animal can hold a copyright. Copyright is fundamentally about being creative and inventive, distinctly human traits. All non-humans do not have the deep and vast creative capacity of a human. Also, a non-human cannot own a camera. What, you may ask, is Mike talking about? Well,
I love this story.
Here it is. A British nature photographer, yes, on a trip to Indonesia set up a tripod and camera in a reserve for crested macaque monkeys. A couple curious monkeys played with the camera and took what turned out to be selfies. Wikipedia and others put the photos on the internet, and now there is a lawsuit over who owns the rights to those pictures, the man or the monkeys. Can animals own copyrights? You should know that the suit was filed in federal court in San Francisco by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA. It seeks a court order allowing PETA to administer all proceeds from the photos for the benefit of the monkey, which is identified as 6-year-old Naruto and other crested macaques living in a reserve on the Indonesian island of Sulawesi.
Oh, so if you read the story in the Washington Post, you can tell they're having so much fun. They're like rolling on the floor laughing. And the last sentence in the story in the Washington Post is great. And the last sentence is, Naruto was unavailable for comment. That's such a great story.
I am with PETA myself, Allison.
I just love this.
Who took the photo?
All right. So there's a few things that you should think about here. First of all, this photo was taken a bunch of years ago. Okay, there was a few years ago, and when Wikipedia actually put it up, the photographer actually sent a cease and desist to take it down. And that's when people started saying, well, wait a second. You didn't take this picture. Well, okay. And now, you know, now the real interesting thing is people are saying, well, wait a second. Do you have to be human to hold a copyright? And people have pointed out that we treat companies as authors of copyright, and companies are not people. Companies,
incorporate the monkey. Right? Problem solved.
get the monkey, a good monkey lawyer.
Well, I think they do with pizza. But so the real question is, the crux of it, and they, I don't know if they're really thinking they're going to win, but the crux of it is, was the monkey acting with, end quotes, creative purpose? Because if you have...
That's not the question at all.
If creative purpose... Oh, shush. If you have creative purpose, then you're allowed to own copyright. What's the question?
The question is, wait a minute. How stupid are these people? That's the question. They're really stupid.
This is about copyright. And
wait, here's what I thought of driving in here. I'm saying, oh, say, I go to Kojo's house. He's got one of those vacuum cleaner robots thing, Roomba or something. So I put a camera on there. It takes a picture of Kojo. Who owns that? Well, the robot owns
it. The U.S. Copyright Office says it will only register copyrights for works produced by humans, not almost humans. Do you agree? Do you agree with that stance? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Who actually took the picture here? The man is exploring legal action against some of the outlets that printed the photos, saying he was very saddened by Peter's lawsuit because he considers himself an advocate of animal rights. But as the Washington Post correctly pointed out, Naruto has yet to respond to this controversy.
This is on so many different levels. This is a great story. One of the subject matter experts they brought in was Wikipedia. Yeah. Wait a minute, who are you? I mean, I know Jimmy Wales. I know those folks. Who are you? I mean, you just put together all this is a subject matter expert on a serious topic like copyright law. I mean, why don't you just ask me or some guy, the next taxi cab driver you see? I mean, come on now. This is just a hilarious story. This is top notch humor.
In another photo story, a new kind of selfie made its debut on Instagram. Video selfies taken with a GoPro mounted on a drone. The illustrator who's been posting these images calls them dronies. FAA rules, is this the next big thing?
What a great, I've been to Central America, and she was at a site in Belize near Uxmal in Chichen Itza, and she had this GoPro on a drone, and it kind of faded away and took a picture of her. She started doing it. Really kind of interesting and creative and thoughtful. But, I mean, what about, airplanes and flight? FAA's got to get a move on, I've talked to pilots about this issue, and the FAA is very scared to make any kind of statements about this at all. So, and then I think whatever happens in the United States is going to be mirrored outside the United States, unless people in Germany and France, they make the statement first. So FAA's got to get on this. They got to decide what you can do with the drone and what you can't.
But let's just remember what this is. This is a video camera, a small little video camera, on something that flies that actually looks like a little robot, okay? Now, batteries die. The thing lands in the wrong place and lands in the water. Even lugging the equipment through airports. This is just not an easy thing to negotiate.
Who owns the droney?
Oh, please.
Well, Mike has an opinion on who owns the photo.
Oh, good.
Mike in Fairfax, Virginia. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, this whole topic is so silly that I think the right answer is we award the right of copyright to the camera, because that's actually what took the picture. Right. As for the drone selfies, there is in fact a company building a gadget initially targeted at skiers, which basically follows you down the hill, videoing you, right? And I can just imagine how well that's going to end.
Well, thank you very much for your comment. The camera also has no comment on this issue. thank you very much for your call. And going back to the earlier discussion we had on the app called People, Kelly in an email says, this sounds like a very bad idea. We can already rate contractors on Angie's List, which can be helpful, but rating friends, no, no, no. And then there is this from a tweet that we got from Fix Wamada, who says, I can't give you my thoughts on this because someone will give me a bad rating.
Well done. Perfect tweet.
For years, ad blockers have been available for your computer to remove those annoying ads that flash and scroll and distract you during web searches. Last month, Apple made ad blockers available for the iPhone and iPad, which is raising practical and philosophical questions about their use. Tell us what you think. 800-433-8850. Do you use an ad blocker? Would you like to put one on your phone? I just did this morning. Do you feel guilty for blocking ads? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org or a tweet at Kojo Show. John, let us start with the practical aspects of this. The New York Times looked at whether blocking ads on a smartphone saves time and money. What did the newspaper find?
Well, it found that some sites are 300% slower with the advertising on there. And so they compared a bunch of different sites. And I thought it was a nice balanced article. I thought it was pretty good because they're in a very delicate world here. They're evaluating the NewYorkTimes.com. I mean, this is a very delicate situation to be in. And I think they did a good job by comparing three different blockers, different sites. And I think this is going to be a real big deal. I mean, 2 years ago, 3 out of 5 searches on Google were done on handheld devices. I mean, most websites now have about 20% viewers are on handheld. And so we know responsive design, handheld is going to be the way it's going to go. And I think the marketers have to respond to this. And I've got what they're going to do, but I want to see what the listeners have to say. What's the response? Do you just not advertise? What do you do?
There's a moral dilemma with ad blocking. These ads are what give us free access to the internet content. If you get rid of the ads, are you going to kill off your favorite websites?
Well, this is very similar to TV. People said the same thing when TiVos came out and the ability to just skip ads. I think that the real question is, what do you want in terms of a product or, you know, of branded information, okay? If the branded information is something useful and is not right in my face, I actually do read it. So it's a question of – or look at it. It's a question of what we can do so that we're not necessarily – pushing people into their data limits on their cell phones.
That's
because,
right.
You know, the with these larger data sizes that the ads create...
You're paying for the ads.
You are paying for the ads.
Someone, I think on Medium, did a calculation and determined that the carriers could be making more off of mobile ads than the people who are actually running them on their sites, just, you know, when you factor in the potential data costs.
Yeah, I mean, the real challenge is if you're a small little, a little company and you really want to get the word out, what do you do to actually, you know, to get that branded information out that where you won't get skipped, that you won't get dumped? And that's really hard. I mean, people are actually going to more of a combination of social media and event-driven branded information. Versus these, like, let me flash it in front of your nose and you can't actually see your information for 10 seconds.
Well, do you recommend installing an ad blocker on your iPhone? If so, John, which one?
Oh, I just take what the recommendations Purify, probably. I mean, the New York Times said they did a great job of it, you know, and I think the New York Times is doing a better and better job about technology reporting and better than the Washington Post. Now, it used to be good with Rob Pigoraro, but they're dropping the ball, but the New York Times is in the game, so I think it was a good story.
So, Coach, I got to ask you, why did you install an ad blocker?
Because I hate seeing ads. You know, as far as I was concerned, the invention of the remote control was the end of my watching television
right.
ads, because then I could start switching channels whenever there was an ad on one channel, and then the channels all conspired to have ads at the same time. And so with the availability of using a Roku or something, you can avoid ads. I don't enjoy ads unless they're really very funny.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. When are the times in our collective popular experiences that ads matter? Well, during the Super Bowl, right? And think about it. What are those why are those ads different than your average ad? What they're doing is they're truly thinking about how to connect to people. And so I'm really not opposed to ads because I think it does support important things in our world that don't that we don't necessarily support any other way. So it's a
careful balancing act of getting that message out and not wasting the viewer's time or diverting their attention from why they went someplace in the first place.
If you talk to the people at the Ad Club of Washington D.C. or the Public Relations Society of America or the content marketers, who people I know, what they say what's going to happen is the big budget money is going to go into something called native advertising. And so they realize that these ads are going to get blocked sooner or later.
Yep.
It's going to be Purify. It's going to be the app from Kojo Namdi, the Namdi app, whatever it's going to block the ads. So what they're going to do, they're going to pivot with something called native advertising, which is articles placed in respectable publications that look like they could be written by the Washington Post, but they're actually advertising Allison's Dry Cleaners or Bill's Tap Dancing Studio or whatever. So native advertising is going to happen in the next 5 years to overcome those ads.
Now, just remember, when you're using an ad blocker, they are actually getting at your data, okay? In fact, AdBlock for the laptop version says, AdBlock won't save or retrieve your personal browsing habits or information for any reason beyond, end quote, what is required to make it work. Now, what does it mean, required to make it work? Okay, mm-hmm. So just remember, you're giving permission to people to access your data. So, and now we all know where that goes, and you know, and the promise not to track you or sell you information, you have to believe in them. And so that's also one of the downsides of ad blockers.
You just can't win. Here now is Michael in Washington, D.C., who wants to go back to the topic we discussed earlier. You know which one. Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Annie, it is obvious that the guy who set up the camera is the one who should own the copyright. that's the common sense approach.
But he didn't take the photo. Naruto took the photo, the monkey.
No, as the other colleague mentioned, the monkey is not, you cannot owe a copyright because it's a monkey. It's not a human being.
See, I'm being concerned about this anti-monkey sentiment.
Michael's actually thinking about this.
Anti-monkey sentiments we're getting on this.
Michael, you're wasting brain cells on this whole process of thinking this through. It's just a funny story.
Please proceed with your argument.
He's serious.
Michael. Shush.
I'm from two countries, Ghana and Brazil, and I love monkeys. I know them. I love them. But this the monkey can be as brilliant as ever. It shall not owe the copyright. Let's assume you summon him to court.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
Summon the monkey to court and say, okay, did you take this picture? What would you expect the monkey to say?
Somebody's probably developing a speech app for monkeys even as we speak.
might be able to answer to
Disney's going to make a movie out of this. I can feel it. Courtroom drama.
Thank you for your call.
Boy, this Michael's strong.
Greg, same topic. Your turn.
Hi, Kojo. I'm sorry. I can't help laughing with the last caller. That's quite funny. It's not something to be upset about, but I'm a photographer myself. The camera, sometimes people buy these GoPros or these new models that people put on their hats and go down that slope. That doesn't mean the copyright belongs to the hat. And on the same note, often, especially on video, the camera is placed down on a tripod and the person who shoots the video may walk away not to cause vibrations on the camera, that video still belongs to that videographer. In the case of the picture, the camera was sat on a tripod, somebody may have pushed a button. And on the same note, there is a famous photographer by the name of Gregory Crutzen, which he sets up all a bunch of equipment and things, but somebody else actually fires the camera. That doesn't mean that the picture did not belong to him. Everything was set up by him, and he's a famous photographer, and all the pictures are copyright. So I don't even understand why we're having this discussion.
Well, you may not understand why we're arguing it, but we're glad you decided to participate in the argument yourself. Thank you very much for your call. And obviously, this is a serious issue, as you will now hear from Jeff in Washington, D.C. Jeff, tell us who you are.
Hi, Kojo. I'm Jeff Kerr. I'm PETA's general counsel. And
whoa!
And I am one of the attorneys that had the privilege of filing this lawsuit. And the purpose of the suit is simply to have, as you've commented on, have the actual being that took the photographs declared the author and the copyright owner. And there's no question that this macaque intentionally, purposefully took these photos. And just as any human who took those photos would be entitled to the copyright, that should be no different for this macaque, whose name is Naruto, by the way, simply because he's not a human.
Well, if the U.S. Copyright Office says it'll only register copyrights for works produced by humans, how will that affect your court argument?
Well, that's the opinion of the Copyright Office, but it's just that. We respectfully disagree with that, and we believe the law is clear that it's whoever takes the photograph is the one who owns it and should benefit. And the purpose of this case is entirely consistent with everything in copyright law, which is to have the photographer, the creator, benefit from the proceeds of that photograph. These animals are critically endangered. 90% of them have been wiped out in the last 25 years, being killed for bushmeat and being killed because they're foraging for food as human population encroaches on them. And all we want is the recognition that the photographer should be entitled to the copyright and the proceeds used to benefit him and his habitat and his community.
What's the timeline for this case to proceed?
It will be several months. The defendants will have an opportunity to file a response, and the court will set a schedule, and we will go from there. But we would expect the first argument in a few months' time, probably.
Jeff, thank you for sharing that with us. And if all of this means that ultimately Naruto gets a lifestyle upgrade, then I am all for it. Thank you very much for your call.
That was such an honor that you called.
Was it an honor?
Yes, it was. I'm so excited that he called.
What about these cameras?
Says the counsel for the other side.
There are national parks with cameras sitting out there with motion detectors. So 2 o'clock in the morning, a deer gets his picture. Who owns that picture? The deer?
I just wonder, we heard from Jeff. Is Naruto going to call in next?
Yes, Naruto.
I'm scoping the lines right now. But if Naruto's calling, he's calling under a pseudonym.
That would be a get. Even the post couldn't match him.
But it is clear that this has struck a chord with people, both our listeners as well as within the studio. And I think this is fabulous discussion. So there, John.
As a result of which, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back. But you can still call 800-433-8850 or send email to kojo@wamu.org. But there's another call, another emailer, before we take that break, who weighs in on the issue of the dronies. Virginia says, who owns the rights of the dronies? The discussion we had earlier about the drones taking pictures. Perhaps the copyright brothers will chime in.
No.
Yeah, that was really bad, Virginia.
Well done.
Early, huh? That's worse than me.
Oh, I love it.
800-433-8850 is the number. I'm Kojo Nandi. The computer guys and gal are here. John Gilroy is Director for Business Development for BLT Global Ventures. Allison Druin is a Special Advisor for the National Digital Strategy for the National Park Service. She doesn't speak for them. She's also a professor at the iSchool at the University of Maryland. She doesn't speak for them.
What about Naruto? Do you speak for him?
And Bill Harlow is a hardware and software technician for Macs and PCs at Mid-Atlantic Consulting Incorporated. The Washington area dodged the worst of Hurricane Joaquin last weekend, but the rain we did get reminds us that storm season is upon us. How do we prepare your tech devices, or how do you prepare your tech devices for the possibility of damaging storms winter and summer? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. What role does your phone play in helping you to prepare for and to endure a big storm? And Allison, what advice do you have for preparing tech devices and data for so-called severe weather events?
Well, it depends, obviously, if you're preparing as a person at a home or in a business. So I'm going to give you the person at a home stuff, okay? First of all, you've got to back up everything. And I'm not saying just back it up, and put it to the side of your computer. I'm saying get this thing off your, out of your house, in the cloud, print it on paper, do whatever, but make sure you back it up a bunch of times. You really got to document what devices you have, because in a real storm and such, you might go months without realizing you've lost things because somebody looted you or it broke and so on. You want to make sure that you unplug all of your devices because of the surge, the surge protection that you really need. And many times surge protectors are not that great at protecting you. You should really have battery packs ready for all of your devices because you really don't want to depend. I mean, look, I'm one of those people that went off to coffee house, in the middle of the winter and sitting by a plug because I basically lost all of my juice and all of my
battery pack.
No battery pack. Too, yeah. Thank you very much. And this is a simple one. Get your tech away from the windows. Okay. Whether the wind is going to come and break windows or the water is going to come in or whatever it is. And speaking of water, you really want to put your tech in plastic sealed cases. If we're talking about a real weather event, you got to be really careful here. And either sealed bags, sealed cases, and even make sure where you put it. If we're talking about a place that regularly gets tornadoes or hurricanes, make sure you put this in, you know, in furniture or underneath furniture that, what do you call it, where if something collapses, you're not necessarily, you know, going to have the thing crushed. At the same time, you don't want to put it on the floor because, you know, you could have a flood, in which case then you also lose it. So,
what are some of the apps that can help us get information during the worst of the storm?
Well, it turns out that I was finding that FEMA, the Federal Emergency Official Emergency Association
Management.
Yes, that's it. And the Red Cross had a bunch of different really nice apps. FEMA's is a general one with, you know, giving you weather alerts, helping you with local shelters, meeting places, and so on. The Red Cross actually has different apps for different weather events. Hurricanes, you know, is one. Earthquakes, tornadoes, wildfires. But the Red Cross has something really interesting. It has a monster app. Okay, for kids 7 to 11. It's actually sponsored by Disney, but they created a game to help kids help the monster stay safe in a weather emergency. So it's actually, there's some nice stuff. So take a look at the Red Cross or FEMA.
I want to be funny here, but people in South Carolina right now are in a world of hurt.
Yeah, so. They really are. So really, you know, and I don't know if this information.
Well, 16 inches of rain in a short period of
there
time.
There you go. And it could have been us. And they were talking about it could have been here. So folks, you know, take it seriously. Don't do this at the last minute. Take a look at these weather apps and such beforehand, because it will help you in the long run.
I got to tell you, the island of Dominica in the Caribbean got 10 inches of rain during the last tropical storm we had. The infrastructure of that country has been damaged. It's going to take that country years. Rain can do a heck of a lot of damage.
That's
well,
right.
As always, we have some new security breaches to examine. Malware at Apple, both on computers and in the App Store, and T-Mobile customers who may be affected by a hack at a credit reporting service. John Gilroy, how did malware get into Apple's App Store? Is this a first?
Well, this is the problem. I mean, I would trust that store. I think it's pretty safe, but it got in through a related application somehow or other. But it's at the point now where I have to start looking at some of these apps from a security perspective and just really start taking a look close at what exactly are they doing, what information they're gathering. And I thought I could trust Apple, but I guess we can't.
Well, what's hilarious is that you can trust Apple if you download the developer tools from Apple. There were people, I think it was in China, where it was taking a while to download, so they just went somewhere else to a non-Apple website to download Xcode, which is what you use to make to develop a Mac and an iOS app.
Because it's faster than the Apple site.
Yeah, so I don't know. To me, that sounds kind of dumb. You should know better if you're a developer.
And number two, Adobe Flash. That's what works. So it worked with. So if you're going to be not careful, you can get in big trouble. So I'm just very, very wary.
Security researchers discovered a new piece of malware targeted at Apple computer users. It opens the door for future Trojan infections. What's it called, and how can Apple users avoid being infected?
This is the Xcode Ghost, right?
No, this is a Mac Keeper.
Oh, Mac Keeper. That's
yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, it poses as software for your Mac that can clean it up and you know solve problems. But it's one of those things where the vector for getting it is usually a sketchy ad somewhere, even on sites you might use and like Speedtest, for example. I see ads for it popping up there, and it's. You know, I would never just randomly install a utility like that on any computer that just showed up in an ad. And the other thing I'd say, too, is even like really good security tools for your PC, because of the nature of how they work on your computer and how much access to the system they need, those can also be a potential vector for malware as well. And not malicious, but it's just one of those risks versus reward situations.
Well, you think about it. Would you go into a store that you've never been in before? It looks a little sketchy. You're not quite sure.
Drink this. What is it? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so you just got to just, you know, think about it and say, wait a second. Do I know this? Do I trust this? And you can always go online and ask, you know, go to social media and ask people, hey, has anyone heard about this?
Never hurts to ask.
Yeah, ask. And, you know, and you'll probably get 10 answers and you'll say, oh, my goodness, I'm so glad I didn't do that.
Bill, T-Mobile customers may have been affected by a hack on the credit reporting service Experian. The exposure seems to affect people who applied for T-Mobile service between September 1st and 16th. What happened, and what does this third attack on Experian in 3 years tell us?
Well, it tells us that our data is just, it does, no matter what you do on your side, no matter who you deal with, there's always a risk that your data can
sloppy.
Be accessed.
That's what it means.
Yeah, it's sloppy on Experian's part, and to the point where even T-Mobile's CEO basically kind of said, we need to review our partnership with Experian in the future, because they made off with, the quote here is, the records contain names, addresses, social security numbers, birth dates and passport numbers, military IDs or driver's license numbers. So pretty sensitive data.
And Allison, a crowdfunding platform for artists called Patreon or Patreon was also hacked. The company advised users to update their passwords. What's the significance of that theft?
Well, you know, here's this. Okay, you've all heard of Kickstarter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And Kickstarter is about funding
one project usually, right?
And I don't know if it says Patreon or I think it's Patreon.
I think it's Patreon, like patron.
Yeah, like patron. So anyway, Patreon is this really great new site, and it actually supports artists and musicians and basically creators of content in an ongoing basis. So when somebody publishes something, and so you say, hey, John just wrote this really cool story, and okay. And,
or this monkey took this really cool photograph.
Yeah, and you're supporting the monkey. So anyway, but what you do is you say, I'm going to, every time John writes something, I'm going to give him $5. I'm going to give you my credit card information, and you just pull it out. And then at any time, you stop paying for these people. So you're a patron of the arts, if you will. I mean, my goodness, this is like, you know, apple pie in America. How are you taking, you're taking from these poor starving artists, okay, finally a way of being able to support them. And so what happened was these wonderful people that were developing the Patreon site, unfortunately, they actually had a debug version of the site that was essentially accessible through the internet, and you should, it should have been behind a firewall, so no one had been able to get it. And what they did was, in this debug version, you know, so the programmers are debugging it and so on, they needed some sample you know, customer information to make sure certain things worked. And so in, and so basically they took a snapshot of the database. And so what happened was they let out the code, and they also let out user information.
I just want to say, too, that since I do back some people on Patreon, and one of the things that a lot of these people are saying, and it totally makes sense, is that this was a platform where, like, hey, there's still starving artists, but, like, there's some consistent income coming in. And, you know, that's really important. And to have the trust in Patreon potentially shattered, I mean, where are they supposed to go? They can't just wash their hands and jump ship to some other platform because, well, one, I can't name the other platform, and two, it's not that simple. I mean, this was an audience that was built up over time, and that's a lot of work, and that's a lot of stuff to have to redo.
They do have a third-party security firm that's doing an audit, changing tools, practices. They did say that the stuff they got was encrypted, and so no credit cards, numbers were stolen, and so on. So there was source code, there was you know, there were some things, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been.
That said, keep an eye on your accounts if you use that site. You never know.
Yeah.
Bill, let's talk about gaming in the minute and a half we have left. Sometimes when you buy a gaming console, it comes with a bundle of games to play. That bundle used to be made up of discs. Now it often includes a code to enter to download a purely digital version of the game. Mm-hmm. That's proving problematic for the business model of the popularly used game store, GameStop. How is the company fighting back?
Well, they're fighting back by basically saying we're going to stop selling consoles with built-in digital codes, because a lot of their bread and butter is letting you trade in your games for pennies on the dollar, so they can then sell that for a huge markup to other people. And you just can't do that with digital downloads. So this is a way for them to hopefully preserve what is turning out to be probably an archaic business model in the long term. They're just hanging on.
And when we talked about ad blocking, we got an email from Eve, who says, I don't mind the ads on web pages. I realize that these ads pay for services that I use. If I don't wish to read the ad, I can do something else for that minute. And this from Dave in Reston. Here's my business proposal. An ad company that A, hosts the ads, B, uses only static images, no flash, no animations, no JavaScript, and C, no tracking. Think of DuckDuckGo for ads. I'd unblock that company on both phone and laptop. And guess what, Dave? You get to have the last word today because we are out of time. John Gilroy is Director for Business Development for BLT Global Ventures. Allison Drone is a Special Advisor for National Digital Strategy for the National Park Service. And Bill Harlow is a Hardware and Software Technician for Macs and PCs at Mid-Atlantic Consulting Incorporated. Together, they are the computer guys and gals. Thank you for joining us, and thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.